Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Football season is here. From youth leagues to the NFL, and all those collisions and helmet-to-helmet hits mean some of those players will inevitably get concussions. Estimates are that at least 300,000 sports-related concussions occur each year in the U.S., and about 20% of them happen to high school athletes. Those numbers are expected to get higher as a better understanding of concussions leads to more reporting. Our next guest studies sports-related head trauma, and he worries that head injuries in youth sports aren't taken seriously enough, even though concussions can be especially damaging in kids. Dr. Robert Cantu is a clinical professor of neurosurgery at the Boston University School of Medicine. He's co-director of BU's Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy, and he co-authored the new book, Concussions and Our Kids. Dr. Cantu, you note in your book that the word concussion comes from a Latin word that means to shake violently. So at the moment of impact that causes a concussion, what exactly happens to the brain?
Well, if I had an egg in my hand, and if it was fresh, and I shook it violently, the outside of the egg shell, would look perfectly normal. But if we were to crack that egg, the yolk would be scrambled. And the brain, fortunately, doesn't get scrambled that much, but it does get subjected to forces that tear it, stretch it, twist it, and injure it.
So what are the symptoms of a concussion? One's beyond the obvious, perhaps.
Well, the symptoms fall in four big baskets. There's a basket of cognitive symptoms, which is difficulty with attention, difficulty with memory, focus, insight, judgment. There's a basket of symptoms that deal with our emotions, typically depression, feeling anxious, feeling tense, feeling panicked, feeling irritable. There's a group of symptoms that deal with sleep, such as sleeping more than usual, less than usual, or trouble falling asleep. And then the final basket are the most common, which are the somatic symptoms, like headache and dizziness and seeing stars, visual changes, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to noise.
So anyone who gets a concussion might experience those, but why do we have to be especially wary of concussions in children?
Well, in children, their brains are not myelinated. This is the coating of nerve fibers. It's like coating on a telephone wire. It gives it extra strength. So the children's brains are particularly vulnerable to trauma. The same degree of force delivered to a child's brain will do much more damage than the same degree of force delivered to an adult's brain. And children's brains are housed in big heads on weak necks, so they're essentially a bobblehead doll just looking for trouble.
You cite a number in your book. You say that the likelihood of an athlete in a contact sport experiencing a concussion is as high as 20% each season. Give us more of a sense of how frequent concussions are in youth sports.
Well, there are about 4,000 concussions each year recognized in sports, but that number is vastly underreported. When we actually study what happens in football and what happens in ice hockey, the actual number of concussions, when you look hard for them, is anywhere between 6 and 8 times the number that we normally expect to see.
So then what advice do you give to coaches and parents who want their children or their players to be able to play but don't want them to get injured?
I think the most important thing is to understand that no head trauma is good head trauma, and to minimize head trauma as much as possible, so that when you're practicing a sport, for Lord's sake, don't let kids bash heads when they're practicing. Take all the unnecessary trauma, head trauma, out of practice.
Although there may be situations in real games where a play requires that or it's going to happen, so how do you prepare them for that moment?
A couple ways. Number one is proper technique. And proper technique in all sports is not leading with the head, not putting the head in harm's way intentionally. Secondly, work very hard at building up your neck muscles. Because if you have a very strong neck and you see the blow coming, you will have a chance to greatly reduce the forces the brain would otherwise see if you tense that strong neck.
Could there be changes in equipment, better, safer equipment?
Well, there can be, but helmets are not really the answer in terms of eliminating concussions. They're marvelous in eliminating skull fractures and reducing intracranial bleeding, subdural hematomas. They're down 80%, which is marvelous. But because most concussions happen because of rotational forces, in other words, spinning the head on the neck from a blow that's taken off the center of gravity of the head, by that I mean far forward or far back, or worse yet, on a face mask on the side of it, so your head is spun, helmets do very little in attenuating those forces. So I don't believe they ever will be the total solution.
So they might give a false sense of protection sometimes.
Well, they can. I certainly don't suggest not wearing helmets, and I do suggest some sports where helmets are not currently being mandated that they should be mandated, such as in girls' lacrosse and in girls' field hockey.
Is there anything else you think should fundamentally change in certain youth sports to reduce concussion risk?
Well, I think the fundamental thing it should change is that collision sports played by youth under the age of 14 should be modified or abolished. I don't think we should be playing tackle football under the age of 14. I think we should be playing flag football. I think we should be listening to Tom Brady's dad, who wouldn't let his son play until he was in high school. And that didn't turn out too badly, did it?
No, although, is Brady the exception? I mean, if most young athletes are kept from playing at a high level until they're in high school, are they never going to have a chance to make it big if that's their dream?
No, and that's really what's terribly important. There are people who played in the National Football League that didn't even play ball in college, for Lord's sake, and learned it coming from wrestling careers or other careers in college. No, if you're an elite athlete, it is true, you will be better at whatever the sport is, whether it be tennis or soccer or football, if you practice it hard from a very early age, have great training, and have great coaches. But ultimately, it's going to be your God-given ability to perform in the sport and the degree of work you put into it that makes you an elite athlete or not, and all that training isn't going to matter.
So maybe you could still one day be an NFL quarterback, even if your mom and dad says no football till you get to high school.
Unquestionably.
You mentioned, Dr. Cantu, in your book that decades ago, many coaches thought it was a bad idea for athletes to drink water while they were playing. Of course, now hydration in sports is so basic. Do you think there's a parallel there with concussions, that decades from now we're going to look back and think, how could we have been so oblivious?
Oh, I don't think it's going to be decades from now. I think we're looking back right now and wondering, I mean, many people are, and I think just 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to be looking back and saying, how could we ever have done that? It's kind of amazing to me to think that the NFL has taken the great lead in saying that if an individual is suspected of having a concussion, much less diagnosed with one, they're out of practice. They can't go back that same day. And yet just 4 or 5 years ago, they were publishing in a peer-reviewed journal, Neurosurgery, proudly stating that 50% of their players went back into the same contest after concussion, and 25% of those rendered unconscious were so tough they could go back into the same contest too. How quickly they've changed.
Dr. Robert Cantu of the Boston University School of Medicine is author of the new book, Concussions and Our Kids. Dr. Cantu, thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you, Sasha.
Dr. Cantu told us something that surprised us, by the way. He says concussions can even happen in synchronized swimming, usually when swimmers accidentally kick the heads of other swimmers. If you have a question about concussions in youth sports, we'll be having a live web chat at 3 p.m. Eastern Time today with Mark Hyman, the co-author of Dr. Cantu's new book. And you can post your questions now at hereandnow.org. When we come back, we'll be talking more about concussions with the head of Pop Warner, the oldest youth football league in the country. That's in 1 minute, Here and Now. Welcome back to Here and Now. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We've been talking about concussions and how they're especially dangerous for young athletes. But since youth sports is a huge industry and such a key part of growing up for many kids, what can teams and coaches do to keep their players safer? For an answer to that, we turn to John Butler. He's the executive director of Pop Warner, the oldest and largest youth football organization in the world. John, the approach to concussions has changed substantially over the years. What kind of shift have you seen in how Pop Warner and other youth sports leagues deal with this issue?
Well, I think it's really been in the last couple of years. I think up until about that time, most of us just had the attitude that, you know, concussions were part of whatever sport you played. You know, I had those cute phrases, you know, oh, you got dinged, you got your bell rung. But all of a sudden we realized that concussions are potentially much more dangerous, especially this so-called second impact syndrome, where a second incident occurs before the first incident is really healed in the brain. We instituted our own concussion rule in September 2010. We were the first national youth sports organization to do so. And then moving forward, there was a study that came out of Virginia Tech University in February of this year, 2012, it indicated it was the first study of youth-level football players. And the two areas of greatest concern that came out of the Virginia Tech study were the volume, the number of hits to the head, and second of all, full-speed head-on drills. So in practice, we now mandate that no more than one-third of practice time include full-speed drills or scrimmaging, and they are not allowed to do any full-speed head-on drills in which the players start more than 3 yards apart. In the words in the summary, it said that 95% of the blows to the head rise to the level of an aggressive pillow fight, but obviously the other 5% of the ones we're all concerned about.
But really, I mean, is there a belief that the vast majority are just innocent and have no impact whatsoever?
At our age level, you have to remember, you know, we are talking about 5 to 14-year-old kids, and if you think back to high school physics, force equals mass times acceleration. So you take a younger child, low mass, low acceleration, not generating a lot of force. I mean, at our younger age weight divisions, kids tend to either run into each other and fall down, or they do a lot of shirt tackling, you know, grab the ball carrier by the shirt and swing him until he falls. So yes, there can be head incidents, you know, contact to the head, but it's much less so than at older ages and with much less force in general. It's not to say concussions can't happen, but they are somewhat less frequent.
John, you talked about how there was sort of a blasé attitude in a way about concussions. It just was looked at as part of the sports, and you can shake it off. Do you think you personally felt that way as well?
Yeah, I mean, the most severe concussion I ever had personally was in a high school basketball game. I was out of school for about 10 days, which at the time nobody could understand. It's like, you bang your head. What's the big deal?
Did you hit heads with another player?
No, I dove for a loose ball and got hit and landed on my coccyx, my tailbone, snapped my head back against the floor.
Oh, and did you end up having symptoms?
Yeah, I had a horrible headache. I had extremely slow reaction time because I can remember the next morning going to shave and sticking my hand under the hot water to see if it was hot and literally saying to myself, "That's really hot. You probably ought to get your hand out of there."
Wow.
Oh.
So given that your personal experience, do you think that when you got involved with Pop Warner later, you still didn't have a full appreciation for what concussions can do to young kids?
No, I don't think any of us really did up until fairly recently. And as some of the doctors on our medical advisory committee call it, it's the invisible injury. You can't see any scarring or, you know, there's no blood, there's no visible contusion. Although there is a contusion inside the skull. So it really is invisible, and there was a very blasé attitude about it. There's no question.
Was it simply a body of growing scientific and medical research that turned the league around in its thinking?
Well, I think it turned hopefully all of us around. I know that not only in Pop Warner and certainly in football at both the NFL and Pop Warner levels, we are all much more aware of the potential damaging effects, especially at our age level, because kids' brains take longer to heal from a concussion than an adult brain.
Dr. Robert Cantu of BU, who we heard from earlier in the show, thinks that kids under 14 shouldn't play collision or contact sports at all. Do you agree with that?
No. I think if you try to bar a kid from playing football or other contact sports, they're just going to do other things that kids do. Kids get concussions in a whole variety of ways. According to the statistics, when I testified at one of the congressional hearings, almost 50% of head injuries in the 7 to 14-year-old age range occur in three activities: bicycling, skateboarding, and skating. And only 41% of kids wear a helmet when they participate in those activities. So that means that everything else that kids do include just over 50% of head injuries. So if kids can't play football, it's not like they're going to sit on a couch wrapped in bubble wrap.
That percentage you just cited, about 50% of head injuries happening in sports other than football, does that ever leave you feeling like football gets scapegoated when it comes to concussions?
Well, I think football is certainly a much easier target because if you're trying to require kids to truly wear helmets when they participate in bicycling, skateboarding, and skating, you're targeting every family with a child in that age range. Football, you can go after an organization, and football, you know, the NFL is the most popular sport in America, so football becomes a very visible target, and certainly it is a collision sport, there's no question. But again, you know, at younger age ranges, the collisions are less frequent and less forceful.
John Butler is the executive director of Pop Warner Football. John, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
If you have any questions about concussions in young athletes, post your questions at hereandnow.org, and we'll answer them at 3 p.m. Eastern Time during a live web chat about head injuries in youth sports. Again, that's hereandnow.org. Monday on Here and Now, former Republican Congressman Mickey Edwards says the political parties have ruined the political system, so he wants to reduce their power. Also, Boston Globe film critic Ty Burr on how partisan films are finding new audiences. That's Monday. Still ahead today, new music from the British pump pop band, The Vaccines. News is next, Here and Now.